da 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 da. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Da 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 da.
All right.
Da da da. All right. That's that. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Cast Overs podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. With me are Brian Terranova and James McLean. They do a bit of background talking while I do most of the ranting. And this week we'll be talking about two things. The Dark Dimension, the abandoned 30th anniversary Doctor Who special. But in the meantime, we're just going to have a quick chat about the possibility of Benedict Cumberbatch playing the Master, as has been suggested by UK newspaper The Daily Express. Chaps, is it a bit obvious or is it inspired casting? Should it be true?
Perhaps a little of both, to be honest. I mean, it does seem a bit obvious that they'd want him in Doctor Who. Obviously, it would seem a little bit more obvious for the Doctor, but I think his portrayal of Sherlock kind of lends a little bit more to a bit of a Master edge. It's a bit of a darker character. I like it. I would welcome it.
Okay, James?
I wouldn't say it's inspired. I'd say it's particularly predictable, isn't it? It's,
yes, yeah.
It's not exactly a hard concept to do, and they do seem to cross-pollinate a lot of these shows where they share producers and production teams and writers. So I wouldn't be entirely surprised if it happened. Plus, it'd be a very popular move. And as Brian says, I think he'd be pretty good. I hope they give John Sims a callback, because I know he's recently said on Twitter, he's popped onto Twitter of late, and it can be quite amusing. He's worth following. He's got a slight,
I follow him, yeah,
slight bitchiness to Doctor Who fans who don't like his Master, which I always enjoy. He said that he'd be interested in returning. He'd consider it. So I would like to see at least John Sims get a send-off if they wanted to move on to Benedict, which I can understand because, again, Moffat likes to really work within his own sphere. He doesn't really cross over stuff from other spheres particularly, so I really can't imagine him doing a show with John Sims purely as the Master, but I could see him doing a regeneration into Benedict, and that could be quite an interesting and popular move for the show.
If we think about where the Master was when we last saw him, he was with the Doctor. There's a bunch of Time Lords there who really shouldn't have been there. Next thing we know, Doctor shoots big gateway controller mechanism with service revolver that never saw action, and they're gone, all of them, including the Master. So presumably the Master either legged it out of a window or he's in the time-locked Gallifrey. Now, if it's...
Is this a serious question, given the history of the Master's various deaths
escapes
and endings?
Yes, it is a serious question. If he escaped through a window, then fine. He's wandering around on Earth. If he didn't, if he ended up on Gallifrey, then that introduces a considerable, you know, big question, given the time law and the time war and the whole time locking element of Gallifrey. Does it not?
Yes. It could also mean bigger things for the 50th anniversary, too.
It could indeed, yes. Yes, my thoughts exactly. James, what do you think?
I don't know. It could be. There's in New Who is a general thing, not just Moffat, but with Davis, there is a bit of a sort of internal fan wankiness about it. Not so much as in fan wank, but with this sort of like production wank, where everything sort of connects together in some way or form. So I wouldn't be entirely surprised. At the same time, I could very much see Moffat, and again, I don't mean this in a rude way, but it just seemed to be in his mode to try and avoid linking up to past stuff unless it's his work. So I could see him just circumnavigating that very quickly and having the Master appear somewhere else and just sort of make a very one-line reference to the fact that he didn't find himself in the time lock and ended up in an entirely different situation in a Moffat or Moffat-related writer's scenario. So I would actually put money more on that.
Okay.
Which is probably more likely anyway, because even Russell did the same thing, just throughout one-liners as explanations.
Yeah.
I think it's a good move, actually. And I think this is, on our next topic, I think this is one thing that I'll be talking about. I think this is I think it's sometimes better to cut off rather than let yourself get caught up in the past stories and overexpand on past events and create new stories from them, because I think sometimes that can shut off new crowds and new audiences, or audiences
yes.
who don't pay much attention. So.
Indeed. So we'll move on now to the main feature this week, which is the Dark Dimension. In the recent issue 3 of Nothing at the End of the Lane, Richard Bignall, he of the Doctor Who research on acid, or on ecstasy, or in some kind of massive extreme Doctor Who research. He does his Doctor Who research while ironing on the side of a mountain. He's basically got to go through the Dark Dimension. If you weren't aware, the Dark Dimension was going to be, and it seems it's a lot more advanced than we previously thought, a 30th anniversary episode of Doctor Who, which was going to be released on video only back in 1993. Various things have been thought and believed about the what's the single episode, which would have united Doctors 3 through to 7 in a single adventure. Little of it has been really released over the years, other than involvement of the Doctors, involvement of Graham Harper as director, who did a lot of work on finding locations, camera scripts, etc. The scripts were by Adrian Wrigglesford, and BBC Enterprises were the driving force behind it. Also key to the Dark Dimension is, or has we've believed over the years, was Philip Segal, who was the man behind the Doctor Who TV movie, which obviously was released in 1996 and ended its production a couple of years after the Dark Dimension was cancelled. What we find in Nothing at the End of the Lane is a vast account which pulls together all the various strands and basically creates a picture of something that was quite unlike anything that has been attempted before or since, but also something that was quite different to what we were told at the time. Let's start with just linking back to what James was saying there about investigating previous plot aspects and take them in a new direction. The Dark Dimension focuses on the Fourth Doctor, who has been held in a non-regenerative state since falling from the radiotelegraph in the end of Logopolis, thereby changing everything that happens since and allowing some crazy guy to basically, or a creature in the guise of a guy, to flex his muscles and become some kind of powerful entity. James, we were talking a few moments ago, or it seems like half an hour ago now, about investigating past elements of scripts, and you're right, we are talking about this now, and the Dark Dimension kind of does this to the extremes in a kind of, well, extreme on the side of a mountain sort of a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember in the fantastic article, it referenced that Doctor Who editor at the time and comic expert of the now, John Freeman, was advised on pushing the Logopolis link for this change in the dimensions, yeah, which keeps the Fourth Doctor going. I must admit, I think it was a bad move. It sounds a great move as a fan, because it's always fun to see things link up and think, what if? I mean, Marvel Comics has done a whole line of comics for 30, for how many, God knows how many decades of what if ideas for their shows, yeah, which is very much what this is in some degrees. It's not quite a what if, because it is still linked to continuity. But it does end up becoming complicated, and I think it sort of creates structural problems. I mean, there's lots of problems, I think, with the Dark Dimension when you actually look at the whole history of the saga. But I think primarily one of the strongest problems was this inability to step forward and trying to be a little too much retrospective, which they had reasons to do, obviously, because they were very much looking, because it was coming through BBC Worldwide and the video market, they were very much looking to a certain degree back, because BBC Worldwide was dealing with videos of the classic show.
Yeah.
So in a sense, the people they were marketing it to were people who were Doctor Who fans. That was very much part of the mandate, because they were supplying a lot of money to BBC Worldwide. But by making it such a celebration of Doctor Who as what was, I think it lost track of what Doctor Who could have been, even as a one-off. Or at least, if nothing else, representative of what Doctor Who would be in 1993, 1994, rather than what it should have been. Because the whole beauty of Doctor Who is it's changed with its era. sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad, sometimes for the time in the Rani. And it needs to be relevant to its time. And I think when it fails is when it gets, and often John Nathan Turner's got this stigma, particularly, and John Nathan Turner being very much there for the inception of the Dark Dimensions premise, the idea of being too retrospective, he's always had a bit of a blight for, sometimes I think unfairly, and sometimes when I look at this idea and having read the synopsis, I think, yeah, I think this was too easy an idea, and it was over a very difficult concept, because obviously to include all the Doctors. But yeah, I think this was a doomed project from the start.
Mm. What do you think, Brian?
I can agree with what James is saying, but at the same time, when you look back at the times, Doctor Who had been cancelled and they weren't trying to bring it back. They were just trying to give something back to the fans who they were trying to both please as well as benefit from. So giving them something that they thought they could at least enjoy, which would be kind of a celebration in a way of Doctor Who, kind of makes sense. Going back to having the fourth Doctor be the main Doctor, you know, looking at it, it seems unfair to Sylvester, but at the same time, and while I love Sylvester and I do love his era, I'm not trying to put the man down at all. The show was canceled during his tenure. So going back and having him be the main focus probably is something that they would have wanted to avoid, while going back to and picking probably the most famous actor to play the Doctor to carry the role seemed obvious and wise. From a story-wise standpoint, having it be an adventure for almost, if you will, like an alternate Doctor. I mean, he was trapped in a state of non-regeneration, aging, and removed from his own proper timeline, and still bringing other Doctors into it. It has that kind of interesting aspect to me that would make me want to watch it. I love when time can be messed with in a storyline, and this adventure can happen, and it could also have never happened, you know, and it's just an interesting idea to me. But at the same time, going with what James said, I mean, also with the resources that they had at the time, it may be best that it never actually happened. But concept-wise, I would have been okay with it.
Okay.
What about you, Christian?
Well, you know, I mean, it's always been one of those, you know, it's a lost story, isn't it, that has slightly different origins to the other lost stories. I've often wondered why Big Finish have never done anything with it. Obviously there's the fourth Doctor element, but I mean that's something that they could do now, but at the same time I've also wondered why no one's ever novelized it. Mm. And why no one has ever perhaps done a comic strip version of it. Those are all, particularly the two print versions, those are things that you can get around without upsetting any of the cast. So, you know, John Pertwee's not going to be upset because he's not in it as much. Colin Baker's not going to be upset because he's not in it as much, because it's a print thing. I've always been fascinated by it, to be honest. I remember being terribly disappointed that it didn't, you know, go anywhere back in 1993. In fact, it was one of the things that kind of slowly got me back into Doctor Who after 2 years of accepting that there was no Doctor Who anymore. So, although the excitement and possibility that there's going to be a new episode of Doctor Who eventually drew me back in quite slowly over the course of 18 months or so. But I mean, ultimately, yeah, I think it was the best thing to cancel it. But the fact that there's a TV series in the production of this alone, going by what is in this magazine.
Mm. It just seems a very messy. I mean, for me, I think what staggers me once you read the article, and it, as I say, is absolutely fascinating and brilliantly written by Bignall. Mm. A brilliant article, is that you can see the problems from the get-go, and you can see how they're going to struggle with it. I mean, the big mistake to me was that they were bringing in BBC Worldwide, who is not really a big, in my understanding anyway, really big on doling out large amounts of money for straight-to-videos, because straight-to-videos sure. weren't a big thing at the time.
Yeah.
Not like the straight-to-DVD market that sort of propped up later. So they were going to budget for something that wasn't usually budgeted for. And the idea itself was just ridiculously grandiose for something which was going to be done on something which was always going to be tenuous on money. I mean, the BBC's always been a little dodgy on relying on budget, which they were worried about on this anyway. BBC Worldwide was not someone who was used to sort of funding this sort of thing. So to then go, well, I know, we'll do the biggest, most crazy, most full of everything straight to video story of all time, just to be like, you know, what are you on? And then you've got the egos, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, I mean this in a professional way. Ego is the wrong word. You've got the professional requirements of effectively 4 or 5 leads that you've got to balance on top of that.
Yeah.
And the rights of the Daleks, which obviously you've always had problems with. And it's just so ridiculously convoluted for something which is so unusual and rare. If it had been me, I know it's very easy to say that, I'd have gone a lot more low key. There was a point, there was an idea when they said it was one idea early on about having a story which would have just been McCoy and Aldred in the TARDIS. And, you know, so it would have been very localized, very low budget. I think obviously that's too low budget sort of thing. But I think the mistake was trying to do something so grandiose on such an unusual and rare and such cautious opportunity. That when things went wrong with the budget, which is perhaps a point we should start making, is because obviously Seagal is the one who has, through the history, got the blame for Dark Dimension's demise. To me, it was just doomed from the start. You read the synopsis and you think, what the hell are you doing, given what, you know, the basis of this production? You're mad. And it's a shame because Graham Harper especially seemed to be so behind it, so excited by it. And I agree, it'd probably make a great big finish or a great book, but given the tenuous situation Doctor Who was in, it was just so ridiculously crazy. It's like sort of running at a door with an Airfix model, you know, carefully, you know, hoping that it'll just throw it through without damaging it. And it's just this very carefully crafted piece of glue and whatever Airfix things are made out of. It was a bad analogy. Moving on.
Yeah, I'm wondering what you're talking about. You've been drinking.
No, I haven't. I was just so overwhelmed when I read the article, and it's one of those horrible articles where you can see where everything's going because you've got the power of retrospect, and you know obviously it's not going to go well. You can see the mistakes as they start to appear, and you can see the cracks, and you just can't. It's just staggering because it's obviously something we'd love to have seen, and yet you can see by trying to create something we'd love to see that it was becoming more and more doomed for failure. And it was just, it's a very upsetting article to read. I think I'm still quite distraught by it.
Okay.
Well, one of the interesting things in the article for me, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It does seem like it was going to just be a nightmare for them to try and do, certainly with having Tom Baker be in the lead role and then trying to persuade the other doctors to come back as cameos, which I think Colin Baker had even kind of not been too keen on before in the past, if I recall him saying that, and rightly so. I mean, they're all the Doctor. Why should any one of them come back as cameos if not equal parts? But what got me was two things. One, the fact that Tom Baker actually said, yeah, I'd like to do this. And B, it was his suggestion to bring in the other Doctors. You know, that seems so foreign for anything we'd seen of Tom Baker in the past. You know, he ordinarily wanted to distance himself or be the one. You know, so that in itself was interesting. But at the same time, trying to please the fans and trying to please the actors while at the same time producing a good final product, just I agree, probably was not going to happen the way that they were going about it.
Did you feel from the synopsis, though, that final product might have looked a bit floppy and a bit it could have looked very messy? And I don't know, I felt a little fan fictiony.
I felt in the past that it could have been fantastic, but reading, and that's purely based on Le Fissier's Nth Doctor.
Yes, I think I'm the same as you. Carry on, sorry.
Yeah, but reading this, I'm reading the various drafts of it, and it starts to fall apart, doesn't it?
Very much so.
With each draft,
yes.
Which is kind of in reverse, which is sort of apt for time travel, I suppose.
I think the mistake of having Dorothy McShane, I think, was a big move, bad move as well. I think after a few years, as much as I'd be very happy to have Ace in there, I think focusing it a lot, especially in the first act, on her was probably, again, a bad move. It's too tied in, I think, to its legacy.
And yeah.
Doctor Who doesn't need to have that sort of legacy. As wonderful as we'd all love to see it so often and occasionally. So often and occasionally, I'm a bundle of crap today. But I'd love to see it. Yeah, I'd love to see it done as a big finish, especially now Baker's on board with big finish. Mm. I think it would be a wonderful opportunity while you've got all of them bar Pertwee. I think that would be great.
Yeah. And just having a look at the locations that were considered by Graham Harper, there's Bagshot Station, considered for the Yeti attack. There's High Chimneys in Windlesham, which is a Grade 2 listed building, which would have been Lethbridge Stewart's home, possibly. Battersea Power Station, kind of obvious. And Gladstone Library in Whitehall, which would have been used as the interior of the TARDIS. There's also, where else is it? There's Royal Holloway College in Egham. Forgive me any mispronunciations. Highclere Castle and Wood Green Crown Court were also photographed as possibilities. Let's just go out to Philip Seagal. Obviously, the next Doctor Who, the only Doctor Who that was produced after this for 9 years was the TV movie. And back in 1995, Philip Seagal claimed responsibility for killing the Dark Dimension, or lost in the Dark Dimension. He told Dreamwatch magazine that if anyone is to blame for the demise of the program, it was me. I'll stand up and take the blame for that one. I have to. If it was meant to be made, it would have been. It wasn't a good script. It was rushed. So slight irony there. It was the wrong way to bring the show back. Yeah, I mean, you can make your own thoughts up on that one. Now, what's interesting is this is apparently isn't the case at all. It was nothing to do with Seagal. If we skip forward, 30th March in 1992, Tony Greenwood faxed, Tony Greenwood being involved in the production at BBC Enterprises, faxed Seagal telling him, I don't know whether this deal is taking giant steps backwards, but it's certainly going around in circles. We are determined to make the Doctor live again in a new production. We thought we had found a partner with Amblin who shared the same fundamental trust in production excellence as the best way to win audiences. However, we will make it happen with someone else. So clearly the relationship with Amblin is breaking down. And later on, an internal memo from Anthony Tomopoulos, who was president of Amblin, we will not be proceeding with Doctor Who. The BBC does not know this yet. So it does seem that Seagal had absolutely nothing to do with the cancellation of the project at all.
And even when he did actually contact them at one point in, and sort of said that this is going to get in the way of the Amblin project, it was, by the looks of it, from the responses to it, it was that interference there was very largely dismissed.
Yeah.
So I was surprised by that as well.
Yeah, very much so, because he's basically been bullshitting us for the best part of 20 years.
I mean, maybe from his point of view, his memory
perhaps from his point of view,
he felt it was to do
and
with
that,
it.
That's what you think was happening. But a quick look at the dates has been pulled together by Bignall shows that that's not the case at all. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Which do you think was the right choice then? The Paul McGann movie or this? Which was the Paul McGann movie worthy to succeed over this BBC Worldwide venture? Or should the BBC Worldwide venture succeeded over the Amblin? Which
I think, despite the problems of the TV movie, it was a big syringe of adrenaline for Doctor Who, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah, I think with the Dark Dimension, it was... Although the ending of the Dark Dimension indicates that the Doctor is regenerating and that it could launch a new series, it's at least certainly in one draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could have gone on from there. We got 9 years of Doctor Who in comic book, in comic strip book and audio form from 90 minutes, of which there was only 60 minutes of the new Doctor.
Well, cause
I don't think the Dark Dimension could have done that.
I think that's my feeling. I wonder whether the Dark Dimension could have actually been the tombstone for Doctor Who, not in the sense that it was crap or would have been crap, but in the sense that it could have felt like a swan song that Doctor Who didn't get and that Doctor Who is over. It could have felt like that, especially because it's so backward looking and not forward facing. At least the Eighth Doctor one was forward looking. It re-energized BBC's belief in Doctor Who quite considerably, I think. And they pulled their, especially even if you just take the way that they pulled their license back from Virgin, and BBC Books took over the main BBC novel franchise. Yeah. So I think so, and I think that's partially because the McGann movie looked forward, even though it wasn't very good. It was looking forward to a future, and that made people want more of a future.
Couldn't argue with that.
What about you, Brian?
I could argue with the "it wasn't very good" bit. Thank you very much. No, I agree, actually. I do feel the same. I think the TV movie was a huge leap forward trying to bring the show back into existence. And as we know, Russell T. Davis had actually said that it was a big inspiration for him for moving the show forward. You know, he obviously took the good bits of it rather than the bits that most fans have issues with. So clearly it did the show more good than not, considering where we're at today. And the Dark Dimensions, I agree, it would have seemed more like, I mean, the nail in the coffin, that's a bit harsh, I guess, but it would have seemed more just like a celebration of a show that's over, rather than let's see where we can take this show from now on.
Because that Doctor Who movie, I mean, while, as I say, I don't think, especially ending was pretty turgid and messy, it did show that Doctor Who, it did feel like a pilot for the 90s. It didn't feel like a particularly bad pilot for the 90s. It felt like a pilot, and it imbued all those things which was going on in the 90s, so far as tone, as in colour, as in music, as in pace. It didn't look too far out the crowd between Sliders and X-Files and that sort of lot. So it showed that Doctor Who didn't have to be like it was remembered, especially in the papers in the 1980s. And I think that was important.
I think the thing that they both got wrong, though, both the Dark Dimensions team as well as the TV movie, was both of them treated the project as a one-off and kind of like Christian had mentioned, or one of you had mentioned, that Dark Dimensions had potentially had an ending with a regeneration, or that a regeneration could happen and the show could go on. You know, they kind of both looked at it as things could go on from here, but in the case of Dark Dimensions, they wanted to make a video and just see what happened. Whereas with the TV movie, instead of commissioning or fighting to commission even a mini series, a 10, 13 episode series, they decided, let's do a movie pilot and see if it generates enough interest to make a series. Whereas if they had made a series, people could have tuned in at random times throughout the first season and decided whether or not they liked it. Whereas with the TV movie, you miss it once, you're done.
I'm pretty sure the TV movie was actually commissioned on the basis of a series, even though it was a standalone movie. It wasn't
if
conditional.
I think
the final commission was just as a standalone. I think it was initially considered as a pilot for a TV series.
Right.
But as time scales and the people, and obviously it moved from Amblin to Universal, didn't it? So in the end, Amblin didn't have any real relationship with it apart from lending Philip Seagal to the project. It just ended up as just a movie that was considered a backdoor pilot.
That was the final hope, that it would generate a series rather than have plans for a series from the start. You're right, and the initial idea was to have a series, but they settled on this, which essentially was what killed it, you know, in my opinion. They pitted it against other shows and a time slot that it was just doomed to fail here. It did get good ratings here, just didn't get what they had hoped. But if they had done a series, most new shows here, when they're going to hit TV, they never start with just a pilot. You know, they always commission commission a short run series that plays during the midseason and see how that'll fare and then develop it from there. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really what they should have done. Even Sliders was that. And you're talking about comparing it to that show. Sliders was started as a mid-season thing. Its first season was a very short half season, like 12 episodes or something like that. It was very short.
Well, I compared it to Sliders as well, because it actually beat Sliders. But because Sliders, I assume, was already a given risk, had a given risk element, and Doctor Who didn't. That wasn't, you know, it wasn't factored into the fact that it was actually more popular than Sliders was at the time for that.
Yeah, but my reasoning for comparing the two is that, you know, they were generally on TV at the same time and essentially started around the same time, whereas one was given the opportunity to have a series to let people decide whether or not they wanted to watch it. Doctor Who was given a TV movie. I think if Sliders had started as a TV movie that would have generated a series, it might have suffered the same fate.
oh, well, Sliders was a show that had to be shot several times in the head before it decided to die, and then it came back and had to be shot a further time.
Well, the sad thing is, I mean, you know, not to get completely off the subject, but Sliders series 1 and 2 were very good, I thought. The third one, they just started to completely just go downhill and lost it from there, unfortunately. But the first two seasons, they had some interesting ideas and played with some interesting concepts.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
But we could have seen that with Doctor Who had they done the series. We could have seen the debate spark much the same way. But
I mean, it's worth mentioning as well, obviously, it did very well over in the UK as well, which was...
Yeah, 9 million plus.
So the interest was certainly there.
And it would have taken Doctor Who in a completely new direction as well. Certainly away from where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Possibly not to everyone's tastes either.
Well, I mean, the original concepts were worse, weren't they?
Yeah.
We've mentioned before with the idea of, what was it, the master being his brother and...
Yeah, and
the dad. Father, and yeah. Oh, good Lord. So what we got, I still think, as much as I don't have much critical love for the Doctor Who movie in terms of what I think they did and where I think they went wrong, it wasn't a bad attempt in the 90s. And as I think we all agree, it certainly did. It did keep Doctor Who rolling on, so it could eventually get its revision in 2005, which I think is pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, the Dark Dimensions is a fascinating read, but it's a read that, in a way, it's kind of nice to read it, because as you've said before, Christian, I had this feeling like it was a real lost opportunity, especially because I'd compare it with the Dimensions in Time, that was the nearest thing that came after. Yes. And you think, good Lord, if only we'd had the Dark Dimension. But having read it, I'm sort of in a way kind of glad we didn't, because it also doesn't really add anything to Doctor Who. I think that was my other problem when reading the synopsis. It goes on this tangent where you see all the Doctors and you have this villain. But at the end of it, you don't feel you've come away with anything new out of Doctor Who. It just feels like a sidestep almost, and then a sidestep back.
I think, reading it as well, you're right in what you're saying. I think, although there is the possibility of introducing Paul Cornell's Bernie Summerfield in there.
Yes, true.
Which he was fine with. He doesn't really add anything other than that. There's some interesting possibilities with the whole thing, that you've got the idea of Rick Mayall or Brian Blessed as Hawksbur.
Some ridiculous casting ideas in there, aren't there? Some crazy ones.
Who else is there? There's David Warren and Tim Curry considered as well. Basing the character on Paddy Ashdown.
Yes.
Paddy Ashdown's never come across to me as particularly malevolent, I have to say. So I'm not really sure why they chose him. Was this around the time when he was...
Paddy Pansdown?
Yeah.
The old tabloid. I can't remember which tabloid had that. I think it was probably The Sun.
I think it's probably topical. The obvious one, yeah.
Yeah, but it did stick.
It did, but... You know, I never really found him as, you know, he's not really the sort of person you'd model a villain on, is he?
No, he is odd, isn't he?
He was a decorated hero, wasn't he? He's not.
Well, there was nothing ever. I mean, of all the things, I mean, aside from the affair issue, which I always think affairs in politicians are a particularly poor choice of scandal, really. They're only human beings, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing particularly nasty or. Powerful. I don't mean that in a rude way. There wasn't anything that was of story material from his personality. I suppose you could say he was quite the politician, an average. I don't know. It was mad reading the article. These names that came up. I was, of course, wasn't surprised to see Brian Blessed's name come up. Crazy. Really, really was crazy. The Summerfield is interesting because it's always a reminder. And as I've said many times before in these podcasts, how much the new adventures have been forgotten as history's got retrospective, that they were at the time considered canon.
It
was no surprise that Dorothy McShane, which was introduced by Cornell, I think, actually, in the new adventures, and then Bernice Summerfield as well, would be picked up quite naturally as being part of the continuation of the show.
Yeah.
Even though now, obviously, with the new show, it's become a lot harder to address.
Speaking of Big Finish, though, as you guys know, I wasn't actually able to complete this article, so I'm going to ask this question. How much of Dark Dimensions was actually written? Because if Big Finish were to try and take it as a lost story or just an adventure to you know, like they did with the stage plays, how much would they have to rewrite? I mean, they've taken other Lost stories and had a complete total rewrite just based off of the actual concept. Is that what we're looking at here?
Or there's certainly a rehearsal script.
Really?
Yeah. There's a photocopy. There's an image of the front page of it in there. Okay. There's Graham Harper's notes on one of the versions of the scripts with characters called Mason and Everett. These are from the future. I think this is from the last draft. Summerfield Sanders. Yeah, these are the future troopers who travel back in time to try and sort the eco troops. That's the other thing as well. There's the crowbarring in of partly understood ecology as well in one of the drafts. I don't know if you noticed that, guys.
Well, there was a lot of crowbarring in there.
Yeah.
That's crowbar, another monster in there.
Yes. Yeah, and there's also the... we were talking about novelization earlier. If I can just pull this bit from page 101. Tony Greenwood contacted Peter Darvill Evans, who was then the editor of the Doctor Who range of books at Virgin, about a forthcoming special. And Darvill Evans was already familiar with Adrian Wrigglesford and explained that Wrigglesford had already intimated him that he would like to write both the novelization of the script as well as any behind-the-scenes book. So there was always a possibility of a novelization. And again, given what Virgin were doing at the time, do we think it's unusual that it's wrong or sad that they opted against that? Because they presumably could have taken that option out regardless of whether it had been published, whether it had been made or not. Or just that more time with what they were trying to do, in the sense that, you know, that era of books was pushing Doctor Who in a new direction that was reasonably popular.
Well, they did Shakedown, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Very much an expanded version of the direct video release, Sontaran story that came out on video.
Yeah.
I think the video release though didn't have the Doctor in it. Did they that in the book version? No.
Am I right in thinking one of them is the sort of the middle of the other, isn't it?
I had both. I think I got rid of both, sadly. Shakedown is a non-Doctor based story with just the Sontarans, with Sophie Aldred and Carol Ann Ford and Brian Croucher as lead, and Jan Chappell from Blake 7 as leads. And the Terence Dix wrote the Virgin version, which mapped the story out around a larger story which involved the Doctor, who bookended a good two-thirds of the book with the actual 50-minute story in the middle, effectively.
Clever way of doing it.
It was, and it was very well done. And there's even a nice little in-joke, as I recall, about the way that the one girl that is played by Sophie Aldred looks suspiciously like Ace, or looks coincidentally like Ace.
Right.
It's made reference to.
Right. I always liked... I never saw it, but I always liked that the redesign they did of the Sontarans, which was had a kind of a Babylon 5, Deep Space Nine sort of feel to them.
It was a good production. And again, as without sounding patronising, maybe the BBC, this production should have looked more at the sort of Shakedown approach than what they were doing, and done something obviously a little more than Shakedown, because Shakedown, as I recall, was done on a ship. I can't remember which ship whether it was in Portsmouth or, but they got the use of a naval vessel, I think it was. They used the bowels of that to be the space yacht that it's all set on.
Right.
And it works pretty well. I mean, in this sort of way that Red Dwarf works with all its gantries, when it goes into certain areas of the Red Dwarf, they're obviously using industrial areas, industrial locations. Yeah. And it felt like that. And it sort of worked. It was let down a little, unfortunately, by some of the acting, which Carol Ann Ford and Sophie Aldred seemed to be struggling a little with their parts, which weren't particularly well formed, I suppose. But yes, it was a good attempt to bring Doctor Who again onto the video market, as they kept doing at the time, at a low budget. And it was quite effective. And as I say, the book was very good. So yes, Virgin was actually doing this sort of thing anyway, so it is a surprise that they didn't actually take a story like this and put it in a book form. Maybe it was considered a little too convoluted for their life. I don't know. Or maybe BBC didn't want them to
Okay. Right. Okay. So we've discussed the script. We've discussed the whole sort of scenario, the basic shambles scenario that was going on in trying to push this project forward. We've talked about some of the people that would have been in it. We've talked about Peter Segal. Let's just sidestep for a moment and think about the people who would have had the most to lose from it, the doctors themselves. Now, as we know, Tom Baker was very keen to be involved and apparently keen to involve his successors. However, it wasn't entirely a popular decision. It wasn't something that the other doctors were that passionate about.
No.
Let's put it that way. Colin Baker had a phone conversation with Graham Harper, which Colin Baker recalled in Doctor Who magazine in 2002. He said, he rang me up full of enthusiasm about it. "Hello, mate. Isn't it great? We're going to be working together again. I had to pour cold water on it. I'm fond of you, Graham, and I love you deeply, but there's no way that any of us are going to do the Dark Dimension." Harper was understandably disappointed. "Can you think about it?" he said. If we also just consider for a moment the words of one of the other doctors elsewhere, Peter Davison, speaking on their BBV documentary, which again is one of those it's like Doctor Who stars featuring in a Doctor Who-ish show, a straight-to-video production. Peter Davison said, "It's ludicrous that BBC Enterprises should be sending us scripts saying we look forward to working with you, but they haven't managed to make contact with any of our agents." And then there's Colin Baker observing that the parts are interchangeable.
Mm. And doesn't McCoy even say that he thinks it was written by a fan?
Yes.
Quite derogatory.
Yeah. Petrie says, "Who's the gentleman who wrote it?" McCoy, "He's a fan." Colin Baker, "A glorified fan, a very nice chap by all accounts, but a little misguided on how to structure a television script for five people of arguably equal status." Yeah. To which Pertwee obviously suggests Barry Letts. So, with that in mind, do we feel, let's look at ourselves as the jury on the Dark Dimension, okay? Did it fail because of the budget, the will of the stars, the script, the production, or Philip Segal? Or what do we think?
I think it was just down to the BBC in many respects, as usual, which is terrible to say that, because obviously they've done a lot of great things, but they all got together and they said this is a good idea, people will do it. And they didn't consider it. And I think, like, really, had they done kind of a more Five Doctors approach to it, and said, let's celebrate this anniversary by celebrating the show and celebrating its worth and celebrating the actors, they would have had more people interested in actually trying to work with it. But I think it was kind of, let's get Tom Baker and, the rest of the guys, we can get them for like a day and just save ourselves some trouble filming. That kind of killed it right there, because what they did was, let's get the other guys and we'll save time by filming them in one day. How's that going to look to them? I really think the BBC just kind of should have, or the people involved, maybe not the BBC, but the people involved with the project should have planned it out a little bit better and tried to make it be a great project, rather than tried to think about things like that.
I'm just imagining the BBC as our single listener listening to this, drinking its coffee, and then just spurting at this point. Like, this whole conversation, this whole podcast, not once mentioned the BBC. Then when it comes to who's to blame, it's us. What did we do?
I think we can be confident
the majority of people involved have since moved on from the BBC.
I think there is an argument, actually, as Brian points out, that the BBC, to a certain degree, were to blame in the sense that they were so distant from wanting to do anything really with the Doctor. Mm. And it was really
BBC television.
And it was left on the laps of the BBC Worldwide, who liked the idea and felt that they could probably front up, but they weren't really in a position perhaps to give the concept enough confidence to do what it had to do.
It was possibly, I think, if I may be so bold, the equivalent of us three producing it.
only they had the bonus of having some contacts.
Yes, it feels like that. It feels like it's done on the side. They'd naturally want to go to the BBC television, and BBC television, then you wouldn't touch it at the time. And so they approached BBC Worldwide because there was a rational reason why BBC Worldwide might be interested in doing a straight to video. I can see the logic in doing that.
Yeah.
But in the end, they're not the sort of resources and backing that you can really depend on. And I think, quite honestly, if the BBC had got involved, they wouldn't have had that production team. I think it would have been something a little more... I'm not saying the people involved weren't professional, because I think that's horrendously unfair, especially to people like Graham Harper. I think the problem is that when you're working for a bigger organisation, you don't have that flexibility that you probably have when you're almost going independent on it. And they keep it a little more under control, keep it a little more under spy, keeping under keep their eyes on.
Well, that's the other thing. There doesn't appear to be any leadership beyond what Harper's doing.
I mean, and at the end,
there doesn't seem to be anyone directing. You know, like there's no definite direction of where it's going to go from someone higher up than Harper. Yeah. He's going out and doing what he needs to do as a director, and apparently doing everything right, as you would expect. He's got all the notes are in there, and it looks fantastic, the work that he's put into it. Mm. But there doesn't seem to be anyone above him who is doing the John Nathan Turner or the Russell T Davies role or whatever, or even a day-to-day producer.
I think that's probably a very good point, because I think, in a way, if you look at the actors and how the actors, by the sounds of it to me, and apologise to these great people if I'm misreading them, it feels like because there was no structure there was no real strong person in authority, that like a lot of people in any organisation, when morale starts to get low, they start to talk together and the negativity starts to grow and build and they start to clump negatively towards the project, and perhaps unfairly as well, because in the end there is only going to be so much that you can put all five doctors into a role. There are going to be ones who are going to be relegated to small scenes, but have to be there thinking, well, I'm there because it's a fan thing, and just being there will make people, me being there will make so many fans so happy, even if I'm just stuck in a courtroom. That should be enough. And you'd probably have, if you had a good organization, you had a good central figure, as you say, running it, they'd probably be that person who'd be there making sure the actors feel like that and make sure the actors are keyed into the project. But they're left to wander, and then they start to get disgruntled, frustrated, they talk to each other, and then you start to lose your key players.
Sure. I think what they failed to do, like, no leader, and if we take Russell T Davies in 2005, he took Liz Sladen out, he and Phil Conson, I think, took Liz Sladen out for a meal and offered a school reunion. On the other hand, you've got at least five of the doctors? Four of the doctors, because we don't know how they approached Tom Baker. You apparently have four of the doctors who have basically had phone calls, or possibly haven't even had phone calls, have had scripts sent to them without any form of, you know, getting to know you. And no, you know, I don't want to use the term schmoozing, but I suppose it's possibly appropriate. But yeah, not just no general communication.
Exactly.
Of a reasonable type. They've just been expected to turn up for a day's pay. Presumably they were all working quite well at the time. Perhaps John Pertwee wasn't, but he probably had a UFO he was building or something. So, you know, why would they be bothered?
Well, exactly.
They haven't been engaged properly, have they, by anyone?
And it is very key with actors. I mean, I've talked to a lot of actors over the last couple of years over various projects. And I've read about them. I mean, you look at Blade Runner, you look at Ridley Scott and Harrison Ford. Ridley Scott is a fantastic director. Harrison Ford's a great actor. But Harrison Ford is a person who likes to be able to talk to the director and actually get a feeling for the character, where they're going. While Ridley Scott is just more interested in making sure that the whole thing looks good, feels good. He's more interested in the camera work and the cinematography, because that's the sort of person he is.
Yeah.
And that can sometimes cause a schism if you've got the sort of wrong sort of actor for there. I know, and it's not actors being egotistical, but they want to be able to feel where their creative part is in a project. And I think that was massively lacking in this. Yeah. And it ended up with Colin Baker feeling like he was just like an action figure stuck in a courtroom again. And, you know, Peter Davison, you know, just some sort of running from Cybermen that anyone could do. And as people and as characters and actors, they were not being looked after. And I think you're right. I think that was another major factor.
So that is The Dark Dimension. It could have been a book. It could have been a comic strip. It could even have been a TV show. Ultimately, it looks like the only way we'll ever find out how The Dark Dimension, or Lost in the Dark Dimension, ever turns out, would be via Ian Levine, the wealthy Doctor Who fan who has a habit of running his own Doctor Who restoration projects. He's, as we reported back in 2011, in March last year, he's currently running a project, an animation project, of The Dark Dimension, which has already featured Sylvester McCoy recording lines. How that turns out, though, we wait with bated breath to discover.
Well, in the End of the Line article, there's the Lee Sullivan. There's a piece by Lee Sullivan.
Oh, yes.
Where did that come from?
Is that commissioned for this? It says Lee Sullivan 2011. At the
it
bottom.
Does, yes, I saw that. So I thought, is it commissioned for this, or is something else being done? Is there a comic version being
done? I'm not aware of anything else being done. Obviously, next year would be the best year to prepare it for. But I think Lee Sullivan has done stuff for other fan zines in the past. It's a lovely piece of work as well, and it looks like it really, you know, there's a lot of... he's really, from what you can see, this, what we've got there, five frames.
Yeah.
He's taken it and he's just gone with it, hasn't he? And it does look really good.
It looks fantastic. I mean, I know it's been said many times before, but he really is the king of drawing Daleks. They look fantastic in the last frame on there. It's well worth buying this just for that, to be honest.
It is.
Well, what's even going to happen with these, though? Because like his Shada, I mean, it sounds like an interesting prospect and something, you know, that I obviously would like to see, but... what's the outlet for fans to even be able to see something like this?
Well, it depends on selling it to BBC, whatever BBC, what are they called now? They used to be To Entertain. They're not To Entertain anymore, are they? They're BBC Consumer Products, as opposed, presumably, to BBC Nuclear Products. And whether or not he can strike a deal with them for inclusion on a DVD.
And what if say it couldn't get included on the DVD because the BBC said no? I mean, is there any rules against fans putting up their own productions on YouTube or something like that for free?
No. He would be able to do that. I suspect if he's putting a lot of money into it, it'll be something he would either be... he'd probably either do it straight away to spite the BBC or he'd keep hold of it for years and years and years. And then it might get aired at the odd convention.
Well, here's hoping the BBC sees the value in it, because both projects sound interesting to me and sound like, you know, a good way to check out these stories. If not, in Shada's case, check it out again. But the question, I mean, it is interesting that Sylvester McCoy is in it, considering what we were talking about with the actors and how they were not even asked to be involved, or how their involvement in the past project wasn't so well received. But to see that Sylvester's actually recorded some lines for it. And even begs the question of, I know you said there was a rehearsal script, but it begs the question of what they did to kind of get a completed script as well. Mm. And what kind of role Sylvester is playing, whether he's playing his role as originally planned, or whether the story may have been a bit more tailored.
Or perhaps John Guiler's in it.
Yes, I was just or thinking perhaps. That for Mr. Pertwee.
Yeah, or even Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Or even all of them.
Or even all of them. Yeah. Okay, so we'll leave it there. This has been the Casteras podcast with a K, discussing The Dark Dimension. My name's Christian Corley. These two chaps are James and Brian. We'll see you next time.